You already this morning. Usually we have to wait till the message time for that to happen. So I got a head start. And the confusion was around, are we doing 8 windows or 16 windows? We are doing 16 windows that go in 2 per hole, so we can sponsor up to that many at this stage, and it's really a cool thing. So I hope I've straightened that out. Now, I don't know if you have ever found yourself in a situation where you are at the end of your rope or not. Some of you are thinking, I'm married. Of course I'm in a situation like that. Where you just, you know, you just don't know. You just don't know quite what to do. Like, I'm in this spot. Where do I go? And you can find yourself angry. And what do you do? Today's message really is it's called Almost Faithful. It's about a leader who is trying to do the right thing, who sort of slips up a little bit in the end. Almost Faithful. It's a story that you will recognize, I suspect, from the Bible. But if you are a teacher, if you are a pastor, if you are a parent, if you are a grandparent, if you are a leader of anyone, you will relate to this. This will relate to you. This might be your temptation too. See, because it happens to the best of us, we reach this place of almost faithful. Almost. Just about made it. Sometimes in that spot, we find ourselves really challenged. Now, the good thing is it's an opportunity to grow. Henry Cloud says, in order to grow, you must attempt things you are unable to do. I feel like I do that every day. But in order to grow, you must attempt things you are unable to do. If you want life change, if you want to get past almost made it, you got to attempt things you're unable to do. Now, our story takes place in the desert of Zin. I gave you a little picture of what that sort of looks like. It doesn't look very, very appealing, does it? It's not a place you want to hang out very long. You would have trouble finding a plant or something to drink. I suppose if you have all your provisions with you, it would be pretty good. But it's kind of a tough place to be. It is next to, but not in, the Promised Land, the nation of Israel. It is not quite there. But what's interesting is, actually, when the nation of Israel looked over to the Promised Land, you would have thought, and it was a land flowing with milk and honey, it was kind of a prophetic sort of a thing. It will one day be a land flowing with milk. It's got some work to do. Around the Sea of Galilee, it could be that, but most of the place is just a pile of sand and rock. And this is from Numbers chapter 20, part of the adventure or misadventure from Moses, I think. And you can follow along on the screen. The scripture will be up there. In the first month, the whole Israelite community arrived at the desert of Zin. This is Numbers 20, verse 1. And they stayed at Kadesh. There Miriam died and was buried. Who is Miriam? That's the sister of Moses. Our leader has just lost his sister. Okay. And they're in this desert of Zin, again, not quite there. Now, there was no water for the community, and the people gathered in opposition to Moses and Aaron. And they quarreled with Moses and said, if only we had died when our brothers fell dead before the Lord. Why did you bring the Lord's community into the wilderness that we and our livestock should die. Why did you bring us up out of Egypt to this terrible place? It has no grain or figs or grapevines or pomegranates. There is no water to drink. Why? And so Moses and Aaron went from the assembly to the entrance of the tent of meetings and fell face down, and the glory of the Lord appeared to them. They got a serious, serious problem on their hand, and they need to do business with God. The Lord said to Moses, "Take the staff, and you and your brother Aaron gather the assembly together. Speak to that rock before their eyes, and it will pour out its water. You will bring water out of the rock for the community so that their livestock can drink." So Moses took the staff from the Lord's presence, just as he commanded. He and Aaron gathered the assembly together in front of the rock, and Moses said to them, "Listen, you rebels." Why do you keep hassling us? I think that's what he's saying. "Listen, must we bring water out of this rock?" Then Moses raised his arm and struck the rock twice with his staff, and water gushed out, and the community and their livestock drank. Now, you may not have picked it up, but something went very wrong in that part of the story. I'll tell you more in a minute. But the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "Because you did not trust me enough to honor me as holy in the sight of the Israelites, you will not bring this community into the land I give them. These are the waters of Meribah, where the Israelites quarreled with the Lord, and where he was proven holy among them." These are the waters of temptation. These are the waters of challenge. These are the waters of Meribah. Maybe you are in the place of temptation and challenge, and in the middle of all the hassle, and they were being hassled, the people said, "Why'd you bring us out here to die? Why'd you..." And I thought about those words for a long time. Where did those words come from? You know, apparently that was their go-to complaint. Every time something would come up, "Why did you bring us out here to die? You know, why didn't you leave us back in Egypt? At least they had some stuff to eat, you know. Yeah, we were slaves. Yeah, we were oppressed." And it's interesting, in those days, God spoke directly to Moses, and God said, "Go here," and they went over here. "Go over there," and they went over there. And every time they were hungry, God fed them. And every time they were thirsty, God gave them something to drink. But every time they said, "Why did you just bring us here to die?" You know, if you're in a conflict with someone, there's usually a go-to wine, isn't there? That was their wine. What's your wine, you know? What's your go-to complaint? How would you put it? And I wondered about that. Why did you bring us out to this desert to let us die? And I was thinking about some situations in my life over the years and how sometimes it seems like people have tried to put my words in their mouth. In other words, they have said things they thought I said, and now they're holding them against me when I did not say them in the first place. I don't like it when people put words, my words, they think, in their mouth, and then they're mad at me for the words. Have you ever been through that? And I don't know, maybe Moses once said, God isn't going to let us die, and they started doing a play on that. But he was just really, really sick and tired of it. Sick and tired of it. Now, I want to look at the staff. What is this staff? So Moses is in the place with God, and the staff is there. And God says, okay, Moses and Aaron, remember the staff. I want you to remember the staff too. When God called Moses to set the people free, here's what happened. Moses said, "I can't do it. I can't. I'm not a leader. I can't speak in front of people. I couldn't possibly. And God said, yes, you can. And and how am I going to do that, God? And God said, well, I guess I'll show him some power. So your staff on the floor right there, the staff gets on the floor and it turns into a snake right on the spot. Remember the story? If my staff turned into a snake, I would think there was something going on. I would think, and in fact, I would be out the door. Yeah. I had a dream just before I got up this morning. Well, it woke me up. It was so petrifying. I saw a mouse. What would a snake do, you know? But in Exodus chapter 4, you read about the staff, and the staff turns into a snake, and God says, okay, pick it up. First snake handler, I guess. And picks it up, and it turns into a staff again. And then God says, hey, that impressed you, Moses. I think it'll impress the people too. Take the staff. The Nile's going to turn into blood. You touch the river with the staff, and the Nile will turn into blood. By the way, I will use the staff to bring water. I'll do this. It'll impress them. It'll impress them, just like it impressed you, Moses. It'll give you a hand. Well, it's interesting. What's interesting to me is what goes wrong in Numbers 20. Maybe you didn't get it. In verse 8 it says, here's what I want you to do. The people are all whining, they're fussing, they're complaining, they're thirsty. The animals are thirsty. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to speak to that rock and water will come out of it. I almost think it's like God is saying, Moses, it's time to learn, for the people to learn they need to trust in God, not in you. So the water from the rock is not abracadabra kind of a thing. I'm providing them water. So you just don't even touch the rock. I want them to know where the water came from. It came from me, not from you. See, Moses, you're not going to be with them forever. You're not going to be. They need to understand they have to depend on me. Now, they wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. Man, that was a long trip. Holy cow. I think they probably didn't get a shower the whole time. I mean, you know? It's no wonder. Speak to the rock. And in verse 11, Moses gets a little dramatic, and he is in front of them, and he does something to the effect of saying, listen, you bunch of whiners. And in the middle of the drama, he goes and smacks the rock, and water comes out of it. And he is almost faithful, and it might seem like a very, very little thing, but because of that very, very little thing, which was really not a very, very little thing, because he almost did the right thing, but he didn't do the right thing. Because of that, Moses was not allowed to see. He was not allowed to see the promised land. God was not pleased because the Lord says to Moses in verse 12, because you did not trust me enough to honor me before the people, you're not going to see the promised land. Well, you're not going to get there. You'll be able to see it from afar. Actually, he stood on a mountain not too far from the Dead Sea, a little bit south. He overlooked this land. He could see it, but he would never enter it. At least God showed him. And I thought to myself as I was reading the text, God, he's been following you for 40 years. Why don't you cut him a little slack here, you know? 40 years! He makes this one mistake. He can't go to the promised land, you know? And then I said, well, it's Old Testament, right? New Testament's about, about grace. And then I wondered about Moses. What's he going through? He's exhausted. He's tired. He is sick and tired of the whining. How many parents have not become sick and tired of the whining? The kids fighting, how many grandparents, you know, sick and tired? How many teachers? And not only that, the story starts. His sister had just died. He's in grief. The dude is going through a lot. I'm like, come on, God, give him a little break. He's reached the end of his rope. He's tired. Every now and then you hear about some religious leader being disobedient and doing something stupid or bad, and you want to tear into him, and yet even Moses messes up here. And so it's easy to be judgmental and to get after and judge people. But I got to tell you, when something goes wrong, there's probably some pain involved. You know, little things add up, don't they? Little things. Just one more little thing. They've complained 1,000 times before, but this time, and they just add up. I imagine probably Moses had been laying down sleeping the night before, and the night before that, and the night before that, and the night before that, saying to God, God, I told you shouldn't pick me. Why did you pick me? What is this about? Why did you do that? I can't do this. And he gets up during the day and he does the work, and every night he's exhausted and he's sort of tired, and he almost got it right. Paul Tripp says, let's be honest. The reality is that few smokers actually quit because of one single moment of resolve. Few people who struggle with food become slim and healthy because of one dramatic moment of commitment. Few people deeply in debt change their financial lifestyle because they're resolved to do so as one year gives way to the next. Few marriages change by means of one dramatic resolution. What he's saying is, people grow and people change in the middle of the mundane, in the middle of the boring, in the middle of life, in the middle of where we're at right now. And it's really related to everyday processes, everyday life. It's just life. It's not always exciting. It's where we live, you know. It's a struggle sometimes, you know, and too many people just get wore out in the middle of the struggle. You will make choices today that probably you don't realize will affect you tomorrow, the next day, the day after. You will make a choice, and you'll think, oh, it's not that big of a deal. It's not that big of a deal, and yet it has a tremendous bearing on tomorrow. We live in the moments, you know, it's the little moments. That's where we live. And the cool thing about that is every day we have a chance to do the right thing with God. Every day. We don't have to wait for a dramatic moment, you know. But we don't like the mundane very much as Christ followers. And so we do some things to get out of the usual, you know. We go off to a Christian concert, or we go on a little retreat, and that's a good thing, because we need to get out of the rut sometimes. But people get bored, don't they? Christians get bored. They get bored in their walk with Christ. They get bored at their church, and what do? They try something else. And that's just the reality. You know, God, I want some drama. I want to see... I want to see some action. People would come to Jesus and say, look, we need a sign. And Jesus said, look, you wicked people, why are you always asking for a sign? You know, we need a sign. And Jesus is saying, you know, I'm not going to give you a sign except for I'm going to live my life. I'm going to live it walking with God, and that'll be the real sign. You'll see some miracles. You'll get taught, but it's every day. It's the everyday stuff, you know. It's the everyday stuff. I wanted to give you a couple things to get past almost in your life. To get past maybe being stuck, the fatigue, the anger, all those things. And honestly, they're not all that revolutionary, but if you want to get past almost, the first thing is it's time for no more excuses. No more excuses. Yes, someone maybe hurt you badly in the past, but that is not an excuse. That is not an excuse for how you're living right now. No more excuses. Yes, some issue is unresolved. You know, it's time to get past that. The reality is what happens to us is not nearly as important as how we respond to it. You know, it really isn't. Second thing is to get past almost is it's going to take some determination. Are you ready to face your blind spots? Are you ready to deal with your issues? Are you ready to sit down with a confession, a counselor, someone to really dig there, to go there? Are you ready to apologize? And it takes determination to do that. I want this thing to be right no matter what it takes. No matter what it takes. And the third thing is to get past almost is we need to begin to focus. Priorities require focus. We need to refocus because our priorities require focus. What are our priorities going to be? And really, it can probably only be one or two things at a time because we have all the other stuff that's just life. But how many priorities can we have on top of that? And sometimes people think my choices are between good and evil. Well, maybe they are sometimes, but sometimes they're between good and good. I can do this good thing or this good thing or this good thing or this good thing. But we can only focus on a couple things at once. And so we have to choose. We may have to say no to something that's good. We may have to say no to something that's good so that we can say yes to the priority of our life. Good things get in the way sometimes. That might sound strange, but we will never be truly great at one thing until we refuse to be almost great at many things. Really, many things. And the last thing is, I think what God asks of us to get past almost is we need to give it our best. Do your best. We don't always make it, but we need to have at least given it our thorough try, given it our best. When I was in college, I had to have 2 years of a foreign language to graduate with a Bachelor of Arts degree. That was just part of the deal, you know. And so I thought I'll take Spanish. Sounds reasonable, right? And by the time we were 5 weeks into it, I hit the date where you either dropped the class or you got nailed with a grade, you know. And I could not learn Spanish to save my life. And so I thought, well, there's a solution. I'll take Greek. Biblical Greek, that'll be easier. And I got through one trimester and through another trimester of first year Greek. And I realized there was no way I was going to pass the third. I was already too far behind. But it took some determination. I said, okay, I'll sit in on the third and I will take first year Greek all over again this summer in an intensive. And I did. I sat in first year Greek, the first two quarters of it, because I'd already taken it. And I just learned everything I could. I got through the next quarter I needed to get through the next trimester. And lo and behold, that summer I took second year Greek. I had to be determined to make it. But God sent this hippie professor who was determined to get us through. And I don't know how great he was, but it was great that he at least passed we who were struggling with Greek. And actually, at one time, 75% of the folks who took first-year Greek failed it. And so God sent this guy to deliver me. And 3 weeks later, taking the entrance exam for seminary, I took the Greek entrance exam so that I could test out of basic Greek, and I failed it. So after that, I took what they affectionately called idiot's Greek, and I got through that. But you know what? It took some determination. You know, I didn't like it. It wasn't fun. I had to keep going. I had to keep going. I had to keep going. I don't know where you're at, where you're at the end of your rope. Keep going. You hear that? Keep going. Where is that place? Why don't we take a minute and just turn that place over to the one who can help us out. It seems, oh God, like it's the big things that get us. Like the big wall that stands between us and some good thing you have for us. When in reality, you just want us to take a little baby step every day. Father, I think of those heroes of the faith like Moses who He almost got it. Thank you, oh God, that he was not allowed to see that promised land because the people needed to know that faithfulness to you is everything. And God, I needed to know that too. Father, as each one in this place is struggling along, maybe it's as a parent or as a wife or as a husband or as a neighbor, because there's a difficult neighbor next door. God, as each one is struggling at work, and they're almost making it, but they're not quite, I just ask that you would give them the grace to get through, that they might not only see the promised land, but that they might have the opportunity to live there. And I ask you to give us peace in the meantime. Peace in the meantime. If you're sitting there saying, that's a great prayer, Pastor, but I don't even really know God at all, I would just say all you can do is give all that you know of yourself to all that you know of Him. Both things are limited. A baby step, and Jesus will take care of the rest. God, help that to be the reality of everyone in this place. In Jesus' name, amen.